Friends, if you were to take a street corner poll asking, what is a Christian? What sort of answers do you think you would get? Now, don't picture yourself doing that street corner poll here in Alberton. Pick a place where there's a little more pedestrian traffic than that. But what sort of response do you think that people in general would make to that question, what is a Christian? Maybe some people might say, somebody who goes to church. Or maybe some would say, you know, people who follow a certain code of conduct. Maybe some might even link up Christian with the name Christ. Though I suspect that probably many wouldn't. Not immediately, anyway. So there is a whole variety to the responses that we might get. And of course, probably all of them would have some element of truth in them, except that they probably, for the most part, wouldn't tell the whole story. Now, people do have expectations of Christians. If you don't think that's true, just wait until the moment when some Christian makes a misstep. Or someone thinks they do. And what do you hear? Well, I thought they were a Christian. Whatever it is that the person who says that has in mind. And, you know, the world has expectations of Christians. Sometimes those expectations are a little strange. But it is right that they should have expectations. Because we have expectations of ourselves. We have expectations about one another in Christian community. And of course, God has expectations about us too, you know. We are a people who have been called together for a purpose. Let me declare that purpose in this summation. Commitment to the Christian faith is more than going to church or following a code of conduct. Commitment to the Christian faith transforms every aspect of how you think, what you value, and how you relate to the world around you. It's that pervasive. It's not an easy thing always to describe. And sometimes we have to confess that when we begin to talk about what it is to be a Christian, we latch on to one of the things out along the edge and make a little too much of that, that pulls us away from seeing a bigger picture, a more challenging one. You see, the expectation is there in faith that if we profess to be Christians, that there will be a certain consistency in our lives, a certain consistency between words and actions, a consistency between the values we profess and the choices we actually make. A certain consistency when we talk about grace and God's grace toward us, a consistency that means that grace is also reflected in our lives toward one another. Now, let's be really upfront about this. That's our target. That's our desire. But we have to confess that often we don't quite get there. Sometimes as a consequence of sin, sometimes just because we're weary or weak, or maybe we haven't thought our faith through in some areas as carefully as we ought to have. And we reflect inconsistency rather than consistency, but it doesn't take away the fact that we aspire to live lives of faith that reflect in what we say and do the things that are represented in Jesus Christ. And the world is right to expect that from us. As I said, sometimes people's expectations are perhaps strange or even rather unreasonable. And criticisms are sometimes voiced that have no real foundation. But we are aware, as people of faith, that we have a commitment. And that commitment touches everything about who we are and how we think, what we value, and how we relate to one another. Now, with that rather long introduction, I'll go to a short sermon. Now, you see, I read a portion from Matthew 13. Two very brief parables, at least as Matthew records them. They're very brief. We might, in fact, read past them and think, what does that much have much to do with what it is that we profess in the faith? What was Jesus getting at in his statements? Well, let me deal with them in the reverse order from which they appear in Matthew 13. Let me mention first the parable of the yeast and the flour. Here it's Jesus teaching the people. And he says to them, "The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed in 3 measures of flour until all of it is leavened." Stop. What do you make of that? It's not a recipe. What was Jesus' point? Well, I think as we look at the remainder of Jesus' teaching, we see that it applies in 2 directions, actually. That faith is to permeate everything about the life of a believer, like the yeast finds its way through the flour and the whole loaf rises. That in every aspect of life, faith has an impact. And of course, the other side of that was, and another lesson that Jesus emphasized often, which could be associated with this parable also, is that his people, believers, should be like leaven in the world. They should have an influence that reaches out in all directions, having something to contribute to every facet of life. Faith belongs everywhere and needs somehow to be worked out in every phase of life and living. Now we confess that we are people who are a work in progress. You know, sometimes we say the Lord isn't finished with us yet. That's very true. Because the Lord calls us to be his people and he brings us through various circumstances and seasons in life, often bringing new things to us that we'd never really considered or contemplated before. Sometimes bringing to us situations that call us to act on things we once knew but have long forgotten. And we have to recover them again and apply them to the life of faith. And sometimes it seems as though our progress is slow. Sometimes it seems as though the steps we make in faith are very small ones. Well, Jesus has a word for us, a bit of encouragement. Jesus said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all the seeds, but when it has grown, it is the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches." He wasn't telling folk how to plant a garden or raise their crops. Or he wasn't saying, you know, if you want to see something spectacular, plant a mustard seed. He was taking something that people knew and likening it to the kingdom of heaven and saying, in essence, think about it, folks. This is the way steps of faith are made, starting small. The sort of thing that to look at it on the surface, you would say, well, that's not very much. And yet, remember the mustard seed. It's small and insignificant, but plant one and you'll see. It grows into a substantial bush, shrub, tree, big enough, tall enough, substantial enough for birds to build nests in it. Who would expect that this very, very tiny seed could result in such a consequence? And this word, friends, is for our encouragement. As the seed of faith is planted within us and grows, that what seems small and what seems to struggle can, in fact, by the grace of God, grow into something substantial, powerful, useful. Something that contributes to the life of the kingdom. So there we have it. We are, you see, called to be what we believe. Seems really simple, doesn't it? But we know it gets kind of complicated when we start to live it out. But we understand that our Christian faith is not some sort of facade that we put on, not sort of some sort of mask that we wear to present ourselves to the world. But it is being what we believe. And we're going to go on and talk about other aspects of believing in the coming weeks. But this is where it begins, because if we recognize and if we accept that this faith we profess has an impact on every phase and every sector of our lives, and indeed, to take it further, every sector of our world and its needs, then our challenge is to be what we believe. And we have an expectation, we have an objective. That was reflected in the passage from Isaiah 61 that Carol read for us this morning, where the prophet says, "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me, he has sent me to bring good news to the oppressed, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and release to the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for those who mourn in Zion and give them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning." That's our calling. As it was for Isaiah, so it is for us. That our own lives individually may be so transformed and be in a constant state of growth and transformation, and that together our impact on the world may to be bearers of good news and hope. Friends, this is wonderfully good news. Thanks be to God.